The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome, welcome. And last week I spoke a little bit about the inner critic, and I'd like to continue on that. Let's talk a little bit more about this idea of first, what is an inner critic and how we might work with it or practice with it. So this inner critic, I think probably, well, let me say this. Those individuals that I know that really haven't had to work so much with their inner critic, it occurred to me recently that surprisingly, none of them were raised in the United States. So I don't know what that means. It's just a little data point that I noticed, right? A really small sample size, completely anecdotal, but it did make me curious about that. That if you're raised in the US, does this mean that we kind of inherited this idea that we have to do more, we have to do better? Kind of implicit in that is the sense that we haven't, as individuals, haven't done enough or something like this. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, right? So, but there's this idea that kind of this inner critic, it uses a certain amount of like maybe shame to motivate us. And the shame is often really not clearly defined. It's not like we could put our finger on, I'm ashamed of this particular experience, or I'm ashamed of some particular aspect, or whatever it might be. It's often more just this pervasive, maybe heavy feeling. And what we can do with this loving kindness practice can be a really big support, and partly because it can shift the tone of this inner voice to no longer be an inner critic, but just to be an inner voice. And we can have, instead of like shame to motivate, like you better not do this because you will have shame. So this fear of shame, or you can't do it because I don't know, right? Shame doesn't usually use logic. It's not something that's like perfectly gets spelled out. And I know there are some people who have done a lot of research on this. Perhaps I should look at some of that. But so I'm not familiar with it. But what I want to point to is that some loving kindness practice, some compassion practice, doesn't use shame as a way to motivate us to create energy to do something. Instead, it uses care and compassion. And it's not in a ooey, gooey, sticky way necessarily. Like sometimes we might feel like, well, I don't want to be like all, oh, I love you, you know, unicorns and rainbows kind of feeling. But maybe what if there's this idea of care and respect and honor ourselves and others, as opposed to kind of beating ourselves up with this kind of like that shame stick or something like this. So loving kindness and compassion practice is a way in which we can shift the tone of this inner voice away from shame and more towards care, love, but I also kind of like this word honor and respect. Because maybe it feels like too far to go all the way to care and love, but what about honor and respect? This ourselves, this is our life experience. Of course we are this way. Of course we have these experiences or these reactions. How could it be otherwise? Like nothing happens out of magic. We know this. And yet there's sometimes when we think about human capacity or human things that we should do or should not do, sometimes there's a little voice inside of us that thinks it should be exempt from all laws of causation. Like it should just happen or should just not happen. But the truth is, and if we think about it, we do know this, that everything has arisen for a reason. And so we don't have to beat ourselves up. It doesn't mean that we can completely shirk all responsibility, or we have to take care, but we also have to recognize that it's a lot of things that have come together that have either created this inner critic or created that event that we're beating ourselves up for, or something like this. So loving kindness practice is a way in which we can kind of like recognize that things arise due to conditions. And we're going to put some conditions into place so that can help shift this tone from guilt and shame towards respect and care. And you wouldn't believe me if I told you it was fast and easy, right? It's not fast. It's not easy. But it doesn't have to be painful. There's something about just doing this regular meditation practice, and in particular, I would say some loving kindness practice for ourselves. It can be really powerful, really powerful. And for me, I think it's really helpful for myself as an individual and in my role as a teacher. I think to not jump right into loving kindness for oneself, but to start where it's easy, to warm up, so to speak. And then kind of like use that and slide into your, use that as a foundation for loving kindness and compassion for ourselves. I'm saying that there are reasons why we have this inner critic and why sometimes the inner critic really flares up. And when if it's really loud, that's just asking a lot. I don't know if there's any human being that can go right from inner critic to loving kindness for oneself. So let's start where it's easy. We'll spend a little time there, and then we'll move into first loving kindness for ourselves and then some care for ourselves. Okay. So with that as a beginning or as an introduction, we'll start with a little bit of just mindfulness practice in terms of just kind of getting embodied. What does it feel like in this body at this moment? We're just tuning in and noticing. Sometimes it's easy to start with the obvious sensations. So there might be the pressure against the body. Just checking in, is there a sense of energy, vitality? Or is there a sense of tired, it's the end of the day and settling in? However it is, can we just notice? Then allowing the attention to rest on the sensations of breathing, feeling the movements. Wherever it feels readily available without straining for you, might be in the chest, the belly. And then when the mind wanders, as it's apt to do, it's okay. This is what minds do. We just simply begin again with the sensations of breathing. And so this practice, mindfulness of breathing, can always be some return to if ever it feels the loving kindness practice feels overwhelming or for whatever reason, you can always come back to this. But to begin our loving kindness practice, bring to mind bring to mind a lovable being, which might be imaginary, kittens, puppies, babies, might be an individual that you have a relationship with. You have an uncomplicated, simple, straightforward relationship. Maybe it's somebody that has really touched your life. You don't have a relationship so much. Maybe you know them, but they're an author or a teacher or mentor, coach, something like this that has maybe made a difference or supported you. Whomever this lovable being is, bringing them to mind and connecting. And connect in a relaxed, easy way. For some people, it's pretty straightforward. For others, there's feeling like, I don't know what this means, connect. Is there a way it can be relaxed and easy? And if it's not there, that's perfectly fine. Could be as simple as having an image in mind and seeing an image not with technicolor precision, could be okay. It is okay to be just have a sense of the lovable being. And then to support our cultivation of love and kindness, to support our warm-hearted connection, can repeat these phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And when the mind wanders, we don't have to make it be a problem. We just begin again in a relaxed, easy way. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. If you find that it's not quite working in a relaxed, easy way, is there an easier, lovable being? Including any recent cat videos. That works. Then building on this loving kindness for the lovable being, this warm-heartedness, can we expand it to include ourselves? For some people, they find it easiest to begin with like a mental image of themselves when they were young, as a child, perhaps. Toddler, young person, grade school, whatever age. For some people, they like to just tune into the felt experience of this moment. And for some people, it's a mental image of how they are now. We're starting with whatever is easiest, the less strain, less difficulty. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Extending some warm-heartedness towards ourselves. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. If it feels a little bit too hard or too complicated or somehow not quite working, it's okay. You can go back and do loving kindness for the lovable being. And kind of get filled up or tuned into or attuned with this warm-heartedness and care and love and respect. And then we're going to include some compassion practice for ourselves. Compassion naturally arises when loving kindness meets difficulties. So bringing to mind a mild difficulty in your life. On a scale of 1 to 10, the difficulty should be about a 2 or maybe a 3. Really mild, small little irritant. Bringing that to mind, we can say this phrase: may this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. If that difficulty or irritant is no longer compelling or interesting, or can go back to loving kindness practice, or choose another simple, easy, on a scale of 2 to 3. Trust me, this does have an impact. It does have an effect, even if we're only using things that are on a scale of 2 or 3 on a scale of 10. Can we do this whole practice with an attitude of warmth and ease? When you forget the phrases, or you find yourself lost in thought, or and then you realize, oh, that's right, I'm supposed to be doing loving kindness practice or compassion practice. Can there be a smile like, well, that's okay. That's what happened. I'm just going to begin again in a relaxed way. We're not beating our heads against a wall with this practice. So this idea of shifting the inner voice, one from being always critical to being one that has some care and respect. You know, sometimes we have this idea that loving kindness, we have this word love in there and we feel like, oh, it has to be big and I don't know, loud somehow or something like that. But there's a way in which kind of like just to honor that this is what our experience is at this moment. And to do so in a way with some openness and some care. Care being, you know, not being dismissive. It doesn't have to be care as a here, let me drop everything and completely change my life in order to take care of it. Sometimes it's easy to fall into this, it has to be big or really difficult or else it doesn't have value. But these practices, starting with something that's at a level two, this can, will make a difference. You know, part of it, right, is consistency. So we're not just hitting it once with a big cannon. It's, we're just doing a little tap at a time. But that's, this is how this practice works. And I think this is how our lives work too, right? For the most part. So now I'd like to provide an opportunity for you guys to talk to each other about this idea of loving kindness practice, kind of like shifting the inner critic from something that's often using the language of shame to something that's using the language of care or respect or honor. And you can choose any of those words that feel most resonant for you. And in these breakout rooms, it's just an opportunity twofold. One, for us, we've been practicing loving kindness. So to like do some loving kindness rather than just silently saying things to ourselves, but to witness other people and to kind of like share and open. But this recognition that we don't have to share our deepest, darkest secrets here. And in fact, it can be helpful just to start with what we were talking about, like the prompt that I'm giving or that Nikki is giving or whomever the teacher is that they're giving as a way so that everybody kind of like starts in a similar area or, you know, if not on the exact same page, maybe in the same chapter. Or something like this. So, and it's helpful to just say one thing and then let it go to the next person. They say one thing, let it go to the next person. They say one thing, and then it comes back around. And then they say something new, having been influenced by what they've heard before, so that together something gets created, or together there's this a sharing of what happens. And so in this breakout room, it makes it easier if it's already settled which order to go in. So why don't we go in alphabetical order? And you'll just have, whoops, I guess I have to start creating these breakout rooms, not just talk about them. And it's helpful if, now, to just say, I did that whole thing about say one thing. Oh, yeah, I'm not so good at this, a multitasking thing, right? Okay, so take good care of each other. And here, oh, whoops, this is what I'm looking for. Okay, here we go. Welcome, welcome back. Does anybody have a comment or a question or something they'd like to say as we end our time together? Yes, Amy.
Hi, everyone. Thank you to my breakout group members. That was really amazing. We had such a really cool exchange of ideas. But I thought I'd share one thing that came up, which is, you know, this idea of the critical voice in our heads, probably running a lot more often than it should. Like as in constantly, the idea of right speech, you know, as part of the Eightfold Noble Path, is something that I've never thought to apply to the voice in my head, and it certainly makes sense too. We'll be working on that.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I'm glad you brought this up. Maybe I'll bring this in for one of these. But this idea that it should be truthful, kind, beneficial, and timely. Like these different qualities about the speech. So not only for others, but for ourselves. Fantastic. Thank you, Amy, for bringing that up. Great. Anybody else have a comment? And thank you also, Amy, for saying that your breakout group was nice. Because, right, sometimes they don't work out, and sometimes they do, right? So just this recognition that sometimes it's maybe a little bit awkward or uncomfortable, and sometimes there's a real pity now. So thank you, Amy. Yes, Susan. Can you unmute, please?
Sorry. In my group, we were really appreciating that compassion phrase you used, you know, may this difficulty be held with kindness and ease, or I forget what you said. And that was so good because it just had equanimity in it. And I realized that a lot of compassion phrases, especially when directed toward myself, there can be a little bit of subtle, like wanting the problem to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, may my pain be eased, or, you know, or may the suffering go away. But there's like this aversion agenda, wanting to change. And this had was just like, okay, just accept it just like it is. And just can I just bring kindness?
Thank you, Susan, for highlighting this. Right? It's so common that there's a subtle little aversion. I'm doing this practice in order to make this other thing go away. And we don't see necessarily that wish, the other thing to go away, how that wish kind of like undermines our practice of trying to meeting it with some warmth and care. So thank you, Susan. Yeah, just be held with kindness and ease. Okay, so here we are at the end of our time together. Thank you. Thank you for your practice and our practicing together. It's a beautiful thing we're doing. I think it's a beautiful thing we're doing. So if you'd like to unmute, we can all say goodbye together.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Danny.
Bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good Wednesday, Terry.
Great. Good to see you.
Bye.
Thank you, Michelle.
Happy enter.
Bye, Michelle.
It's very sweet. Very sweet.